Zeke Kralin, Ezekiel J. Kralin, K-R-A-H-L-I-N, keeps at least two websites that I know of. There's the Zeke blog is one of them, Zeke blog. And the other one is Gay Bible, gay-bible.org. He's been sending me a story every week also for some little while. And this one is titled A Quiet Night at Mission Station. Zeke Kralin writes, "Last night, 20 days after my birthday, I am feeling my oats over a satiating revenge soon to occur, a day or two or three from now. So I decide to take a break from my hovel and meander about the hood, drinking in the negative ion scintillating breezes kicking off the Pacific Ocean. I'm already inebriated, just enough to unwind and feel good about my modest but delectable wiener that so many gorgeous dudes have enjoyed in recent months. For the key to unlocking the solution to Larkin's ousting me from the Castro bars over 2.5 years ago had fallen into my pocket just 2 days prior, when Sloan stepped up to me and shook my hand there in Toad Hall. She is barkeep at the Mix and good friends with Irene, who tends the mixology in the open-air patio of Toad Hall, who was also, by the way, a big fan of my novel, Free Me From This Bond. I assumed that Sloan had just departed from a visit with Irene, for they are good friends. Now, chlamydial reader, do note that I have no truly close friends yet. Thus, my association with Irene, Sloan, or anyone else is more peripheral than intimate. In fact, I rarely see either, yet I now understand the divine purpose of my social isolation, that I grow wise in spirit without the distraction of chummy frippery that so many among us take for granted. For I serve a great purpose that shall manifest quite soon. One evening, in May of 2013, I stepped into the Mix to enjoy a well drink, never dreaming that Larkin would be present. And there he was, standing right before me at the bar to receive a second Budweiser from Sloan, back turned to me, which really means his patootie was almost to my chin, being so tall and leaning forward upon the varnished rail. As I frequently do, I offered some quarters to Larkin that he may play one or two more rounds of billiards. That's when he noticed me and whispered into Sloan's ear, 'He's my stalker. Get him out of here, please.' Before I knew it, Sloan reclaimed my second vodka and tonic and tossed the contents away. 'Leave,' she demanded, 'now.' She refused to let me defend myself, so before I exited, I declared, 'Maybe I'll write a letter to the SF Bay Times about what an asshole you are.' Since then, she's denied me any communication. Rarely do our paths cross, but when they do, it's like my drifting by an iceberg. Sad, because I had recently befriended Irene hanging out at the Mix, who honored me with incredible accolades for my novel, and who thus could be a fantastic booster towards my opus becoming a bestseller. The revenge I seek and have now manifested is a postcard I mailed to the 5 gay bars that Larkin frequents here in the Castro. On the front is taped a tiny printout which says, 'New rule. Do not allow Larkin to enter or remain in any gay bar, saloon, tavern, or the like without my company, except for Moby Dick, wherever his roommate Zachary is tending bar. Whenever his roommate Zachary is tending bar.' On the reverse address side, I wrote by hand in metallic ink, 'Who wants to play Twister? The Elephant Man on his birthday.' Thus, in sacred reverie, I stroll the Castro, intending to return... hovel in 5 or 10 minutes, but that's not to be, as I find myself suddenly surrounded by 3 of San Francisco's finest. Next thing I know, I'm seated and handcuffed to a rail in a holding tank at the SFPD's Mission Station. A terribly glamorous cop is tending the desk that looks into this room, which contains but one other fellow who's lying down against the opposite wall, back turned toward me. He wears baggy beige pants and a dark T-shirt. I cannot see his face or anything else of his identifying factors, including his basket, which may or may not be worth the ogle. While seated there with my left wrist shackled by a steel cuff to the rail, I notice the door just feet away, albeit with a number pad, though it doesn't occur to me in my stupor that the door is most likely clamped down with 4 or more coded digits. So I figure if I can squirm my way out of this handcuff, I can then jump to the door, open it, and escape. What happens next is nothing short of a miracle, for somehow I manage to extract myself from the handcuff. God only knows how, since my alcoholic phantasms leave me clueless. But here I am, ready to jump up and leap the gate, Fortunately, common sense takes over and advises, you'll never get out of here without being chased down and possibly shot, so give it up. Which is precisely what I do, calling to the handsome blue shirt who mans the desk and possesses a glorious head of orange locks cut about 2 inches from the scalp, looking like the proper policeman he is, a ginger-haired Adonis. Don't know the color of his eyes yet, but I'll bet they're sky blue or some other shade equally breathtaking. Look, officer, my hand is free, I declare with raised and formerly cuffed arm, in order to have him approach and shower me with some of that sweet attention. How did you do that? He queries while observing my left hand with his crotch less than 15 inches from this yearning cake hole. I don't really know, but it was not too difficult, I reply. I'm not going anywhere. I just wanted to point this out. Which is a good thing, I observe with hindsight, as you don't want some dangerous arrestee unshackling his cuff and wreaking havoc before you force him into a docile state once more. So the officer returns with another steel cuff and fastens both of my wrists to the rail so that I can no longer lie down, but am forced to sit up. Such a compromising vulnerability inspires me to yell to him through the window about a half hour later with right hand pointing to my loins. I need to piss, please. I really don't want to urinate in my pants, I beg with puppy eyes. After all, I just can't get enough of his attentive ministration. The darling Flatfoot complies and leads me cautiously to the restroom. I won't be a problem, sir. I'll just take a whiz and return, I assure him. But when he pushes aside the door to the lavatory, I don't see anything resembling a toilet or urinal, just a blank room. So I glance back at him. It's there. It's over there, he signals to a gray divider that conceals the commode. So I relieve myself, wishing like the devil I could whack off while he stares at me through the vertical glass plate and kindly offer my wrists, once resuming my person back to the metal bench positioned on the north side of this holding cell. A few minutes later, my unwitting cellmate begins to holler, "Look, I don't want to be here all night. Move me to 850 Bryant now." The police stationed there for the night ignore him, so he yanks out a bag filled with brown fluid that wobbles in its soft plastic case, obviously attached to his side by a snaking tube, and warns, "This is my colostomy bag. If you guys don't move me to the city jail pronto, I'm going to squirt this shit all over the place." Of course, I panic, and you can't blame me, and squeal, "Officers, please do something about this, or I'll puke my guts out." I'm yanking on my shackles instinctively, as I'm most eager to distance myself from this potential upchuck jamboree. To my relief, they calm him down and resume their deskly duties. A while later, they remove his handcuff and escort him to city jail. "Are you going to send me there, too?" I call to the bodacious ginger, windowpane framing his face like a vitreous Mondrian halo. He assures while looking up at the clock, not visible to this unintentional miscreant, "No, we're going to release you in 15 minutes. Yet sometime before, I hear them talk about me. He may be suicidal, remarks a bald-headed servant of the law, who gives me a quick glance. So I rage back, "No, I am not suicidal. I figured out what happened. I don't want to talk to a lawyer. Just let me speak with you guys." They all look up, but feign I don't exist. So I remain condemned to this Kafkaesque scenario a while longer, fuming at Larkin's latest horse hockey for what I have figured out after some deliberation on a cold steel shelf that I couldn't even recline upon is that Larkin has retaliated in response to my getting him kicked out of Castro Bars thanks to my new rule postcard, and that Larkin had whipped out his cell phone to get back at me, described me as suicidal, and worse, I'm sure, to the SFPD. Approximately 3 hours later, they release me, with that uber-hot gendarme escorting me outside the police station. "Just go there," he declares while pointing at a break in the cyclone fence, like we just had a sordid one-nighter and his lover would be home soon, or he's too ashamed to be seen with me, so he sneaks me out the back, which I believe heads to 17th Street, just 6 blocks from my cozy Warren. He hands me a large, crisp, and neatly top-folded paper bag, stapled and with my name artfully scribed on one side. "Here are your things, including all your money." "Money?" My ears perk up, for I know that my billfold is anorexic tonight, though mayhaps the kind and handsome O'Doole wanted to be extra nice and slip me a 10-spot. Mr. Seraphim in uniform lowers his head in modesty. "Oh, I mean 35 cents. "Oh-ho," I laugh. "Don't get my hopes up like that." On our journey to the rabbit hole exit, only 20 yards distant, I quickly converse. My ex-lover Larkin is PO'd that I just got him 86th from all the Castro bars, then, as afterthought, probably all the gay bars in San Francisco. O'Toole stares back with a comely smile. Eyelids drooped as if high on a strong aphrodisiac. I'd say he's 5'11", built most endearingly. Those yellow-red shocks of hair shine like spun gold under these fluorescent ribbons of light. I feel like we've been the happiest of amours for a long, long time, and I'm only now recovering from severe amnesia that left several blocks of forgetfulness in different and scattered parts of memory. Spanning some 30-odd years, the blocks could be anywhere from 5 months to almost 3 years. And they change, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. Fortunately, they've all begun to shrink, leaving erased memories restored once more and fully intact. I have just begun to remember anything. What angelic loves have I lost because of this? Is this affectionate cub one of them who still awaits my anamnestic return? Are there others so loyal? And what higher purpose has Goddess deemed to achieve from my Corinthian tragedy? For if I really don't know anything else, I surely know one thing is certain, as if clad in armor. My rewards will be mighty. His look entices me to tell more. I think perhaps his hand rests on my forearm, though more likely it's wishful thinking and an alcoholic ganja-laced memory. Plus, I don't want to cause him any trouble at work. Oh, we really got into it, I boast, proud to have such a tough guy for my lovebird, though wasting the SFPD's time is crossing a line. I can play hardball all he wants, and I won't back down ever, but I refuse to fight fire with fire under such an unkind strike. We're almost at the cyclone wormhole now. So I look directly into those rapturous eyes, well aware that this may be the last time I speak to him, or ever see him again, for that sad matter. Remember his name, Larkin Kelsey. The kind peacemaker does not respond, but I know he respectfully hears. Just before I depart into the void, he states, "My name is Officer O'Doole." "O'Dooley noted," I joke, but with an arm extended for a beefy handshake. He abruptly raises his right hand in rejection. Oh, my hand's dirty with ink right now. "Fist bump, then," I suggest in warm amity and appreciation. With that, our knuckles touch and I skedaddle. Standing a half block up, I open my grocery bag to reclaim my USF hoodie gifted me by Gregory, military camouflage cap, my wallet, 35 cents in change, but one thing is missing from the billfold. The four business cards that promote my novel free me from this bond. Each card includes a link to the gratis version, along with my email and landline number. I'm greatly flattered. Now fully reassembled from my hovel-bound journey, I deeply inhale the damp, chill night. Holler with all my strength every half block. "Fuck you, Larkin Kelsey! Fuck you!" My voice boomed through the darkened asphalt byways, an echo you don't want to mess with. Somehow I turn a wrong corner and don't realize that till 10 minutes later. Thus, I have to walk an additional five blocks to wend my way back to my dumpy SRO. "Fuck you, Larkin Kelsey! Fuck you!" Almost home and crossing Church Street, here comes Hollywood with his large, fat sort of pit bull named Diesel. Hollywood is, by the way, a really good guy living on the streets. Heterosexual, dumpy appearance, dirty blonde hair, scruffy beard. We've recently become closer friends. He's also my newest scout who reports back to me when needed, Ree Larkin. I run up to them. "Hollywood, Hollywood, I just got out of jail. Mission Station. Larkin screwed me over again." Hollywood and Diesel stand there in calm demeanor as I rant further in beat-face wrath. "What Larkin did is horrible. He went too far this time, calling 911, telling them I'm a lunatic with a death wish." I pause for deep breath. If I ever had any feelings for Larkin, they are now over, totally over, kaput, washed up like a beached beluga. Hollywood exhales one lone remark. "Uh-huh." Then turns away from me to meander further east down Market Street, Diesel in tow. And I do mean in tow, because that beast weighs 150 pounds and is possessed by a bold will of its own. Once halted, it's a Herculean task to get this quasi-mastiff up and moving again. I march off in a huff of extended outrage, seeking to track down Larkin and give him a piece of my brain pan while chasing him all the way back to his own residence, just one block west of mine. Alas, he is nowhere to be found. Thus I goose-step back, hovel, and sleep it off. By late morning next day, I'm rolling on the floor laughing my ass off, realizing I've been punked by the SFPD big time, knowing full well that Larkin, of course, had to be the mastermind behind it all. His retaliation for my getting him kicked out of all the bars in the Castro just 2 days ago, for that is when my new rule postcard hit the booze halls like scat to a propeller. I can see the lads in blue laughing their own arses off. Immediately after, O'Doul escorts me to the exit. Did you see the expression on Zeke's face when you pulled out that colostomy bag? Ha, 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 yeah, priceless, chortles another copper who played the role of my cellmate. Let's watch it again. And he left clicks on the mouse once more.